Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio. And hey, we are in the midst of a pandemic, just in case you haven't heard. But, you know, Mother Nature is still beautiful, and it's a gorgeous spring day again here in beautiful Butte, Montana. And today our guest on Heartstock is Angela Conrad. She's the founder of Hemp Buyer and HempBuyerAuction.com. This will be her second appearance on Heartstock Radio. And I'm really excited to hear what's new and what Angela is up to. Remember that you can find us on Facebook, and you can also email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. Always looking for beautiful guests doing wonderful things in the realm of business. In just a moment, Angela will be with us, and we shall be back to share her story. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock. Thank you for listening to Heartstock Radio. I am your host, Carol Murphy, and Clark Grant is manning the board. And our guest today is Angela Conrad of Hemp Buyer. Hi, Angela.
Hello, Carol.
Thank you so much for being our guest again on Heartstock. Can you give our listeners a little intro and tell them a little bit about your enterprise?
Sure. So we founded a website called HempBuyer.com, which was a WooCommerce site that was designed for B2B transactions of hemp and CBD products, and also for smaller manufacturers. And through the experience of connecting with various people in the industry, it became very apparent that we needed to do something that was more robust. So we are in the very latter stages of the development of HempBuyerAuction.com, which is a customized B2B auction and marketplace and classified site with a more structured and robust experience.
So just to make sure we're all understanding you correctly, essentially right now, this type of marketplace does not exist. So growers and people who are producing CBD oil and whatnot, CBD type products, will be able to utilize your site to find buyers for their products. Is that right?
That is correct. However, there's a big imbalance between the demand and supply of the industry right now. There was a lot of people that did jump in, so there's an abundant oversupply of raw materials. And because the regulations are not mature, and probably aren't hold for a little bit because the world is a little sidetracked, you know, there were not a lot of structured transactions. So people were doing transactions in parking lots and in cash and, you know, letting strangers on their property and just a very unstructured ways of doing transactions. So that's the past. We are just waiting for things to move forward, and we'll get more regulations and more structure. And Our site is designed to help.
Please share with our listeners just a little bit about your journey and why it is that you decided to start this enterprise.
Sure. So I have been an entrepreneur like many people, and my first career was as an alternative body worker. I had one of the first practices here in Orange County, California, and I had that for 20 years and was very successful and grew it into corporate accounts. And we eventually had physical therapy and chiropractic and all those kinds of things. And then in those days, you could not find that kind of work. It was very alternative. So, you know, once that became mainstream, I sold that practice, and then I jumped into reverse mortgages to help with our aging population. And I did that for about 10 years and learned a lot about lending and qualifications and numbers and doing business over the internet and, you know, meeting underwriter guidelines and government guidelines, et cetera. And then when I was exposed to this industry quite by accident, I dabbled in it to help my spouse, who was helping people under Prop 215, and just saw it was complete, not chaos, but certainly not the way I was used to doing business. So we saw that opportunity and taking our skill sets to help create a way for people to be safe in their business in the hemp industry.
Mm-hmm. And in a kind of unexpected way, I can imagine that the professions that you were involved with in the past really helped you. First thing that comes to mind is all of the regulations, and you're very accustomed to dealing with all of those. Can you talk about that a little bit? You know, where's the crossover, and how has your past helped?
Sure. So I was very lucky in my first career in that I worked on a lot of very successful entrepreneurs, you know, people that, you know, Fortune 500 CEO types. And, you know, I understood the way they grew and how they operated and ran their sales force and how they did good business. And so I was very lucky in that I learned just from sheer exposure. And I also learned that I operate very independently. So I'm very good at just creating things from scratch and executing. So when I worked with reverse mortgages, I was never in an office, so to speak. I was always a virtual. In this industry, it's high touch, but it is very possible to do it also virtually. So people are continually looking for ways to connect over the internet. We're not just a small town economy. We're a world economy. And so people can easily connect over, you know, from one side of the country to the other and internationally, et cetera, and create wonderful friendships and relationships. And, you know, I've taken my lending background and applied it to, you know, creating this website. So buyers will be vetted and we have escrow lined up and testing and sample protocols. So I think that we're in a good place to help.
Mm-hmm. You said it's high touch. What did you mean by that?
There's a lot of distrust. So very common to have a conversation with a buyer or a seller, and they'll say, hey, I've been, for lack of better words, I've been gypped or I've been taken. There's falsified test results. The material is not consistent. And because we don't yet have structured regulation and we don't yet have standards, so, for example, perfectly transparent here, I am not a farmer, but I know enough that there's different grades of agriculture. Tobacco, for instance, there's different grades of tobacco, and we need those kinds of standards in the hemp industry. So that's up and coming, and in the meantime, there is a lot of distrust, and so people need samples, there has to be inspections. A lot of people don't know what they're doing as far as their storage of the material, or they, you know, there needs to be more education and more thoughtful planning as far as good execution in business in this industry.
Yes, and we talked a little bit about this before. There's a lot of confusion in consumers' minds. The difference between hemp and cannabis, can you kind of enlighten us as to, you know, what are the differences, and talk a little bit more about the specific products that will be bought and sold on your site. Is it cannabis?
Well, hemp and cannabis are cousins. Industrial hemp is defined by a total 0.3% THC. There are still some states, and here's some of the confusion, there's still some states that are operating underneath previous regulations, the 2014 Farm Bill, and those regulations talked about the Delta 9 THC being 0.3. But it's my understanding that the up-and-coming standard will be the total 0.3 THC will define industrial hemp. Types of products that will be on our site are, you know, biomass, the raw materials, seeds, clones, seedlings, a grain seed, the oils, the crude oils, the distillates, the isolates, and also we are welcoming the supportive services and products. You know, so there's a classified section where people can offer insurance or banking or transportation services. There's a big need for people to connect.
Mm-hmm. So the hemp itself, it seems like there are so many different types of hemp, depending on what you're going to use it for. My particular interest and excitement around hemp is the use of hemp in textiles, but the type of hemp that's needed for that is so much different than, say, something that you're going to feed to your livestock or something that you're going to make CBD oil out of. Can you help us understand that a little bit too? And I'm sure that adds compounding layers of complexity to the industry.
Sure. So there is multiple plants, multiple strains. You're very correct that there's some confusion, and they call some strains flower-rich or oil-rich plants, and then fiber plants that can be used for fiber and or feed. There's also, I've heard the term a tri-plant, you know, so that you can use the stalks for fiber and then the flower itself for extraction. You know, it won't be as potent in CBD oils as a specific strain for extraction, but it is a multi-use plant. And just to touch on the fiber aspect, that's an area of the industry that's even less mature than the CBD oil industry. I think, as you just mentioned, I mean, I find it very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm. And how about for building materials? Because I see all kinds of things online built out of hemp now, even an airplane.
You know, there are those industries on a very small scale. My understanding is that in order to create or develop that part of our industry is that we need processing plants for fiber. I actually have been working with a gentleman who has a project that he's worked out to put, you know, potentially 5 plants in North America. And, you know, I've also read that there's a potential that once, you know, that area of the industry grows, that it'll be a majority of our industry. You know, it could be up to 70% of the sales that occur.
So 70% of all hemp products will be used for construction and building materials? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it could. Well, yeah, well, other things besides just CBD oil. Mm. So it could be the fibers for clothing. It could be for animal feed and bedding. It could be for the biofuels. It could be for, I mean, all kinds of sources. The plastics, you know, the bioplastics, there's some development there. Mm. And there are small pockets of builders that are working with hempcrete. But there again, I just read an article the other day that there's a lack of standards. You know, that would be another interesting interview for your show as someone that knows about building materials. That something has to do with the permeability of hempcrete that needs to be studied by builders. So we're just sort of not even the embryonic state of that part of the industry, I think.
Mm-hmm. Just scratching the surface, but it does seem like the overwhelming, at this stage of the game, the overwhelming activity is around CBD oil.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're at that midway point. We're going to take a quick music break, and just a moment, we'll be back with Angela Conrad. This is Heartstock.
Thank you.
This is Heartstock Radio, and our guest today is Angela Conrad, and she has a startup that's called Hemp Buyer and hempauction.com. We were just talking about the evolving industry of hemp and all the many uses for hemp and how things have changed so much since the industry is now recognized and kind of come above board, so to speak. And, you know, all of the entrepreneurs no longer have to operate in the shadows, which is a good thing. And I'm sure they appreciate what it is that you guys are working on. So, Angela, hi again.
Hello.
What is your mission? I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, go down the road 10 years from now, what is it that you want to achieve with Hemp Buyer and hempauction.com?
Well, our goal is to create a safe and structured place for business to develop and be conducted. That's our ultimate goal. We have contracted a third-party vetting service called LexisNexis to vet our members, so we know exactly who is on our website. Also, we have really tried to take the conversations that I've had with manufacturers and growers and other entrepreneurs in this space and really tried to hear what their pains are, where do they need help. And the way a typical grower sells their flower, they'll send out samples and pictures and test results, and they'll do this over and over again, and they may or may not do business with the people they've sent samples out or information to. And oftentimes it's continually done over the phone through text. Our website is, once you are vetted, then the membership is free. There's no cost, so there's no friction there. We don't have a monthly fee. We don't have an initial fee. We're simply based upon the business that we develop for our members. We have opportunities for auctioning. We have opportunities for fixed pricing. We have opportunities for classified, so people, as I shared with you earlier, that they can share their other services. And then we want to bring the buyer and the seller together. In other situations, I've heard of other brokers and other platforms where they try to do these transactions that are double blind so that they can keep the buyer and the seller apart. And I just don't think that that's feasible, and it's not comfortable. We really want to help create with the relationships.
Yeah, and it's hard to build a business relationship if everyone is anonymous, I would think.
It is. It absolutely is. And there are terms in the industry, you know, the unicorn or the broker chains, all those kinds of things. They just don't work. You probably remember the old telephone game as kids where, you know, you all sit in a circle and you send one message around the circle, and by the time it gets to the end of the circle, the message is completely distorted. That's the way a business is done right now. So it's not very effective, and there's a lot of energy that's wasted.
Mm-hmm. And for those who are listening and or know somebody that could use your services as a seller, how does one get vetted? What is that process like?
So in the process, everything can be done online. So once we launch, they'll be able to sign up and send in their licensing information or their business documents. And on the website, they'll be able to put in their information, which goes to LexisNexis. They'll kick back a score as far as the reliability. You know, is this person who they say they are? And, you know, once we're confident that they are, then they'll be a vetted member. And additionally, we also have a code of conduct that people have to agree to. So, honesty, integrity is, you know, that they say they have what they say they have, and following honest business practices, you know, in general. And that'll be an annual re-up, code of ethics kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you've been speaking with a lot of your potential customers to find out what their pain points are. And I'm sure you could tell us a few stories of things that have gone awry. What are some significant issues currently that sellers and buyers are facing?
You know, up until just recently, there was not banking or escrow available. And I can remember one particular transaction that I put together. It was a buyer and seller, and the buyer took delivery of the material, and all the test results were you know, what they say they were, and the seller didn't end up paying the buyer. Mm. And it was because there was no escrow that was used, which was unfortunate. So the seller, you know, lost out. And it's not uncommon.
Got robbed, basically.
So they were robbed.
Yeah.
They were.
So when you say escrow, can you explain how that works and why it's important?
Sure. An escrow service is an independent third party, and their job is to follow the contract. And they're independent from us. We don't have any ownership. We can't tell them what to do. They simply have to follow the contract that has been agreed upon by the buyer and seller. So we'll bring the buyer and seller together. They'll agree on a price, on the product, and they'll agree on the standard operating procedures in order to attain that product. The funds, you know, the agreed upon funds goes to the escrow service along with a copy of the contract. And then according to what the buyer and seller wish, as far as their protocol, as far as quarantining the material, inspection of the material, samples, et cetera, whatever is depicted in the contract, the escrow service cannot release funds until everybody agrees that the letters of the contract have been met. Mm-hmm. And then the transaction can go forward from there.
Yeah. And the seller doesn't walk away empty-handed.
No, and neither does the buyer.
Right.
You know, maybe the buyer was, and there's been certain instances where they've gotten moldy material, or maybe it was misrepresented, you know, in some way, you know, oxidized or not properly stored, or, you know, there can be a whole host of things because we're talking about a perishable product for the most part.
Yes, indeed. So just how big is this industry? I mean, this is sounding like really big business. And I'm also wondering, you know, how you're monetizing it. You kind of alluded to that before, but you're getting a commission?
Sure. So on completed sale, we'll take a commission. And so our commission is 4.2%. And then also we have our agreements with the seller for the most part. Mm-hmm. So when we bring buyers to the seller, we want to help them develop contracts additionally. So, you know, so part of our relationship is, you know, with the sellers to bring them qualified, you know, buyers, or in the case of a manufacturer, you know, bring them accounts. That is our goal. And we'll take that small percentage and we'll do it on a sliding scale over a period of 3 years. But it's no risk because there's no cost to it. You know, we absorb, you know, all the cost of the overhead of the website and the vetting, and escrow is independent. So, and it's very affordable. You know, it's worth avoiding the risk of doing unstructured transactions for sure.
Mm-hmm. And what are your, I'm not sure if you're comfortable sharing this information, but I have to ask the question. What do you anticipate your annual revenues and how will those change over time? I mean, just how,
you know,
what's the volume of sales?
Oh, geez, Carol. I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to say right now because we're in the midst of this pandemic. Everything's on hold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the industry is partly waiting for the FDA to, you know, make more regulations available for hemp extract as a supplement, and so we don't have any anticipation. And we're not the only folks that are putting this kind of a service out there. Very much like real estate, in that commonly used, there's a common way that people will purchase houses for the most part. You know, oftentimes there's a buyer's representative and there's a seller's representative and there's an escrow and there's certain inspections that happen, right? I anticipate that kind of a structure will be available not only domestically but also internationally.
Oh yes,
we've heard from people in Mexico and in Eastern Europe. And South Africa, so you know it's anticipated to be a worldwide industry.
Yeah, bright future ahead. And how might our listeners find you?
Sure, so they can contact me through our website, hempbuyerauction.com. We'll be launched here in a couple weeks. There might be some hold. You know, we've talked to some growers and some manufacturers, especially those folks that are in New York. They're definitely on hold for now.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, just like anything else, we'll just be on hold until things calm down and then, you know, we will go forth.
This too shall pass.
We're entrepreneurs and business people. So.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Angela. This is Heartstock, And we shall see you next week. It will be a replay, and we'll be back live on the air in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. Peace.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via livestream at butteamericaradio.org.
That's right.